Hi everyone and Happy New Year. Welcome to the Viewfinder Vikings. My name's Ian Nutt. This is an episode for the three of you out there that listen to Viewfinder Vikings. Don't listen to the Sunny 16 podcast. The reason being is what I'm about to do is tag on this week's Sunny 16 episode, which is me talking to Aid and Graham about the creation of zines. So similar to the last Viewfinder Vikings episode where I talked you through the creation of a zine from start to finish, I was helping Graham and Aid with their latest assignment, which is to create the first Sunny 16 presenters zine. And so yeah, really fun chat. They're really easy people to talk to. I think Graham's interviewing style gets better with every episode, and yeah, you can hear that for yourself on the episode that I'll tag on to the end of this recording. Other things to tell you about, so over the coming weeks, Sven and I are hoping to release several episodes where we'll be individually talking to photographers and people that we think you'll be interested in hearing from. So it won't be Sven and I together interviewing somebody as we've done in the past, because we seem to be really struggling to find time where our schedules overlap enough to get a guest on and speak, the three of us. So instead, we'll be making our own episodes where Sven will talk to people and I'll talk to other people, and we'll record those conversations and drop them into the Viewfinder Vikings feed. So hope you look forward to that. There's the first of those should be up next week with Sven talking to a very special guest, which you'll hear more about when that episode comes out. So in the meantime, this is this week's Sunny 16. Enjoy.
Hey everybody, and welcome to the Sunny 16 podcast. My name is Aid. You probably know the voice by now. We've done one or two of these. This is show 185, so maybe more than one or two. Sadly, Rach's not with us again this week. She is coming back soon. Definitely coming back soon. I do have, though, my sidekick, my better half, my partner in podcasting crime. Hello mate, how you doing?
I'm doing very well. I mean, you know, we have got at least 184 previous podcast crimes committed. I feel that that's quite a good description, really, partnering podcast crimes or crimes against podcasting, however you want to phrase it.
Do you know what, as we record this, right, 2 days from now, I'm going to meet the person in real life. I'm going to meet the person whose fault it is. And you are as well, aren't you? Are you coming down to town on Thursday?
That is the plan. I bought a train ticket, so I'm at least 50% of the way there. Now all I have to do is use the train ticket to get down. And yes, I sincerely hope so, because it would be lovely to get to meet Chris finally after all these years and basically say, what have you done to our lives?
Look what you did. This is your legacy. So yeah. for those who don't know the history, Graham and I first met on the internet in a forum for an old photography forum called Pixelated Photographer. And there was an associated podcast run by a chap called Chris Gillick, an expatriate Welshman who lives in Tokyo. So because he lives in Tokyo, we've never met. And yet we will meet for the first time on Thursday evening, hopefully. So that is going to be fun. A moment of truth. We go to meet our maker, Graham.
Not before time.
Anyway, it's not just the two of us. So we're rudely ignoring our super special guest for this evening. So what you've done, as always, the pre-production work of arranging everything. So you get the honour of introducing our guest.
In the loosest possible sense, this is actually somebody who I think we've probably said, oh, we're going to have this person on, and talked about it and tried to organise it in the past. But every time he slipped through our fingers like a wiggly eel.
Like a lamppost in the night.
Yeah. Did you know eels used to be a currency in England? Anyway, it is from internet awesomeness. From everybody will know him from Twitter and Instagram as Barnaby Nutt, but it is the one and only Ian Nutt. We've pinched him from the Viewfinder Vikings to bring him here. all for our very selves. Ian, welcome to the show.
Hello, hello. It's really nice to be kind of interacting with you rather than just listening. It's quite a strange thing. I have to keep reminding myself not just to sit here and listen, but I do actually need to speak all the time.
I wouldn't worry about it at all.
I have the opposite problem. I just sit here and don't listen. it's weird for me too, you know, because we've had your voice on the podcast before. You recorded a piece for us last year when you were up a very windy hill taking pictures. So we've heard your voice. Yeah, it's lovely to actually finally get you on the show.
Yeah, I think really good to be here.
We originally hoped to talk to you back before Christmas when we were taking on the last assignment, which was a long time ago.
Yeah, day and tonight, I think. And I think I let you down with minutes to go before the recording. I do apologise for that. But
Well, that's all right. We forgive you. We love you anyway, Ian. But it's great to have you, because we've got you back now because it seems like the perfect time. Because this assignment, which we've set ourselves, the idea of producing a zine and actually seeing it through and doing it rather than talking about it, as with all of these things, we need help. We need help. And you have been quite prolific with your zine making over the last, well, few years now, up to the point where very recently you shot and produced a zine in pretty much one day, didn't you?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. So I think I'm seven zines in now. A couple have been collaborations, sort of gathering together other people's work. But yeah, as you say, the last one was a day, one roll of film, and I went out, shot the roll, got home, processed it, scanned it, produced the zine, uploaded it and ordered it all in sort of 24 hours. And the part of the reason for doing that was just to kind of demonstrate that zines are or can be that simple, that they don't have to be like a life's work or years in the making, that you can do these in a fairly straightforward way, you know?
Yeah. So a good place to start with this is why zines in the first place. At this point, more and more zines are coming out, more and more people are getting into making it. It feels like that there are more services appearing for making it easier to make it. But as you said, you're seven zines in, you started a few years ago. What was the impetus to make your first zine?
Well, I think discovering that you could make these things as cheaply as you can. So, you know, back Aid and I were just talking that sort of 10 or 12 years ago when we were first getting into photography, one of the ways of producing a book was to use Blurb, a service called Blurb, where you could make a hardback book, but the things ended up costing you 30 or 40 quid a time. Finding out that you can get kind of print on demand zines for £1 or £2 a time, and this is obviously professionally printed rather than kind of handmade zines. We'll perhaps come on to those later. But just the idea that these things can be so cheap, and it serves two purposes, really. First of all, it gets your work into print, which I think is the ultimate, should be the end game, the goal for anybody who's producing photographic work, is to get the thing back into a physical form, number one. But also the idea that, again, talking to Aid earlier, that a zine, you can read it, you can enjoy it, tuck it away on a shelf and then forget about it. And maybe in 10 years time, you'll be clearing off that shelf and rediscover that zine and rediscover somebody's work. And that's never going to happen with Instagram, you know. You're never going to go 10 years back in time and look at what somebody was doing. But with a zine or with a simple book or publication like this, then that's always an opportunity. And I think that was the attraction for me, just so twofold, getting things out into other people's hands, you know, and the idea that we could sort of stumble across these things in years to come and enjoy them again.
Do you know what? It turns out, yes, because in that conversation just now, it turned out that I actually have done this before. I was clearing out a bookshelf at the weekend to donate some books to charity so that they could be enjoyed by others and could free up a bit of space in the house. These are sort of paperback novels of the sci-fi genre, mostly not my nice coffee table photo books, or I should hasten to add, not my little growing collection of zines either. And I found some books from 2009 where I had taken portraits of various members of extended family, And I'd forgotten about it completely. I was quite new to photography in those days. Definitely a lot of over-processing of photographs. The shots themselves, the base shots underneath the processing, not too bad. It reminded me of that line, which I think, what was the band from Sheffield called? And not Def Leppard, the more recent Pulp. One.
Kaiser
no,
Chiefs.
God, this is, we're aging ourselves here. Not the Leopard, not Pulp, who were actually a growing band when I was a student in Sheffield. Can't remember. Anyway, there's a line from one of their songs which says something like, "I can't see through your fake tan." And my own post-processing techniques reminded me of that line. Anyway, never mind. So Ian, tell us about it. I mean, you say, so I'm intrigued already because it doesn't have to be, you can do it in a day. It only costs £2. I mean, that's cheaper than shooting a roll of film, isn't it?
They really are. Of course, it depends on your kind of production values. If you want kind of stiff covers and 60 pages and that sort of thing, then it's going to cost you a little bit more. But the latest one that I've just put out was, I think it was 24 pages. It did have a slightly stiffer cover just to give it a bit more kind of physical presence, if you like. But it was, you know, that was, I paid £50 for 25 plus postage. So yeah, the effectively £2 each. So, and the minimum order quantity, I think from Mixum, which is the company that I use, is 12 or 13 or something like that is the minimum order. So, you know, they are pretty cheap. Certainly, yeah. The postage cost for posting them out to people is more than you'll spend on actually creating the zine.
So I've got a question, because before you started making zines, were you printing your stuff regularly anyway?
Yeah. So I've had a half decent inkjet for a while. And before that was kind of, you know, ordering prints from various companies. So I always had I had like an A4 paper box of just the best prints from, you know, the last couple of months. And I took them in there and just leave them on the kitchen table sort of thing. Just to, again, that thing I was talking about, just about picking them up and rediscovering them a couple of months later. And just the kind of random nature of that. Of stumbling across things that, you know, I like, you know, I think, so I've always been keen to print stuff, for that reason. And, you know, everybody's got concerns about hard drives and about digital rot or whatever it's called, but
I've got a lot of concerns about digital rot.
But yeah, just the idea of having a box of prints that you can grab and take out and share around and just, as you say, just stumble across in years to come. I think it's really, really powerful.
So from having now made a transition to making zines more, for somebody, so if we take out of the equation the idea that you perhaps want to sell it to raise money for yourself or a charity or something like that, if you're just doing it as a passion project for yourself in the first instance, what do you think is the benefit, or if there is a benefit, of making zines or photo books rather than just getting prints made?
So I think there's a value in bodies of work rather than individual images. I think you've got to be a really good photographer to tell a story or to give a true kind of mood and to express what you're feeling about a particular subject in one image. I think that's virtually impossible. But you can do that with as few as, you know, with a handful of images or with a handful of pictures, again, to either tell a story or to set a scene or to create some sort of mood, you know. And so the idea of a book, a book rather than individual prints, I think, is, you know, makes more sense to me.
Mm. What was your first zine that you put together?
So the first one actually was I was part of a photography exhibition that was me and a Polish guy and a guy from the Czech Republic. And we'd all been to visit the guy in Poland and shot pictures in his area, which is a kind of post-industrial area of southern Poland called Katowice. And an art curator in Poland saw saw one of our work and then discovered the story that we'd met up and we'd kind of traveled over there to meet this guy and been shown around and all produced their own work from the area. And he said, I want to put an exhibition on of that. So he invited three of us to do that. We submitted four or five pictures each, I think. And it was in a pub in Wrocław in Poland, and then moved round to a couple of other cities in Poland. And this was the first time I'd been involved in anything like that. And I was completely blown away. I was really kidding myself. I was like an artist, and I was kind of this big time photographer just because I got some pictures hanging on a wall in a pub. So
more than I've ever achieved.
Well, I'd still look back on it really fondly. The opening night, which, you know, it wasn't kind of little triangle sandwiches and wine. It was a beery night because it was in this really good pub. But I wanted something to kind of remember that whole experience, the exhibition and meeting the guys, and for them to kind of, you know, for people that couldn't make the show, I wanted some way of showing them the work from the three of us. So at that point, investigated what the options were for getting that printed. And that led me to putting them into a zine format. I used Mixum for the first time, and I think we printed sort of 25 copies, gave them away instantly, printed another 25 copies. And I think we probably gave away about 100 copies of that to friends and family. And then people got to learn the story and were interested in it. And so that was the sort of first taste of it. And really enjoyed that part of the process. I mean, we'll perhaps talk about the process of putting one of these things together later on, but I find that it brings more to my photography than just going out and taking the pictures. So when you've got to think about how pictures work together, or you know, what paper you want to print them on, and you know, the shape and size of the finished product and that sort of stuff, I enjoyed all of those decisions. And as I say, it made more sense. So when I went out shooting photography after that, I was thinking already about how that might look in a zine format, and so gave me a little bit of guidance rather than wandering around aimlessly taking pictures. You know, I had a sort of end result in mind. So
that's so interesting.
That first one kind of led to another one pretty quickly afterwards, really.
So can I ask then about, you know, I guess the starting point is to create content, isn't it? And, you know, between Rachel Graham and I, we've got a mix of content that already exists and could be curated and content that would need to be created. Now, I don't, not having been through this process really properly before, I don't really know much about the curation side of it. I mean, I'm a bit of an armchair student of cinematography, so I know that, you know, in cinematography there are concepts such as establishing shots and and close-ups and things like that. Is it sensible to think about the content of a body of work for print in that kind of a way?
Definitely. Yeah. I mean, the study of sequencing photo books is you could spend your life reading about that and studying it, you know, yourself. And photo books, part of the reason that photo books can be art rather than just a collection of pictures is to do with the sequencing and to do with the stories and the mood that you can create with pictures, and a lot of that comes from the sequencing. It's not just the images that, you know, they're greater than the greater than the sum of the parts sort of thing, you know. Talking about establishing shots, you'll often look at photo books that open with that sort of wide scene. They might have doorways, or they might have cars if you're about to start a journey. You know, though they sound fairly cliched, but do start to, again, set the scene. So as you start your way through the book, you're being led on a story, and you're even subconsciously, people are, as soon as they see a car door or a steering wheel, or they're looking out through a windscreen or that sort of thing, you're telling people that you're taking them on a journey, if you see what I mean. And of course, you can overthink this, and you can study this all your life. You could just chuck a set of pictures into a book and let other people work it out for themselves, or kind of overlay their own narrative to it. You can be as arty with this as you want, or as straightforward as you want, I think. But I think in terms of content for these things, so it's either a case of coming up with a theme, going out and shooting work for that, which might be a day on a hillside, as we were talking about, or it might be, you know, it might be 4 or 5 years of collecting a certain type of image, which is what I did with a zine called Fabrica. Or what you might do is do that in retrospect and kind of, if you spend long enough taking pictures, you tend to create collections, I find anyway. So if I see a 1980s, early 1990s Mercedes on the street, I'll take a picture of it and I'll try and make it an interesting picture. You know, likewise, if I see, you know, concrete flyovers and concretes in at sunset, the light on concrete and things like that, I just have to take pictures of it whenever I see it. and everybody has these sorts of collections, I think. So again, thinking retrospectively back through your Lightroom catalog, you can begin to drop these things into a folder and start thinking about, you know, if you've got a collection that might be, you know, might work together as a sort of body of work.
That I guess is how you get a book about abandoned mattresses, isn't it?
Which
of course for those that don't know the reference, it's a reference to Animal Mysteries' book. I forget the name of it, but it's a great book, and I really like it.
And I guess what happened there was he suddenly realised I've got 7 or 8 abandoned mattresses here now, and I'm going to go out and find maybe another 4 or 5, and then, you know, when I get to that point, I'll think about putting it together into a collection like that. And as I say, I think we've all got collections of some description, and we might not even realize it, but I think if you wander around with a camera long enough, you'll naturally be drawn to the same kind of subject matter over and over again.
Do you know, I've just had an idea, because I know a lot of these digital asset management applications these days have got quite good searching in, even if you never keyworded stuff. Mm-hmm. It might be an interesting exercise just to spend 5 minutes putting in some odd keywords or search words into your library of photos and see what the algorithms bring back.
Yeah. It may well be the case that there's hidden collections there that you haven't even realized that you've got. So might be worth investigating that. I think the other thing that can be difficult as we talk about curation of the work is, again, depends what you're trying to do with it. If you're trying to just show off your best work, then that might be different to creating a story and creating something that's a little bit more artistic. If I say artistic, I don't want to put people off, but you know what I mean, right? If you want to create something that's more than just some pictures in a book, then you might have to think about chucking out the best pictures or the pictures that you like the most that don't work with the other pictures that are in the collection, if you see what I mean.
Yeah, yes, because you've got to think of it as a coherent whole.
You have, yeah. And of course, there's the asterisk after all of this is you do whatever the hell you want. This is your work.
Sorry, Barney, go on.
No, yeah.
Too many names.
Yeah, this can be whatever you want, but as I say, the curation part of it, I think the thing to do is certainly start with more pictures than you're going to need. So if you start with 50 and cut it down to 30, and just make sure that you go through that process over and over again, just to make sure that that when you come back to it in 3 or 4 years' time, you don't think, oh, that just looks out of place, or I wish I hadn't put that in there, where I have just spend your time thinking about that. The good thing about these cheap print on demand printers is that you can change the file, re-upload it. If you see a howler or see something you're not happy with, you can easily change that and good point.
That's one of the things that I do love so much about this format is, as you said, you can do whatever the hell you want with it. You can go down the route of, okay, I want this to be a considered collection on a theme, put together as carefully as possible so that people get taken on. So it is a kind of a portfolio piece that you can give to somebody and hopefully they'll look through it. Or it can be a collection of pictures that are meaningful to you, or it can be, I've got in front of me Matthew Joseph's book, which is called 2019, but he's written in Braille on the front because he was running out of ideas, apparently. But yeah, Matthew's book, it's clearly curated. He's clearly gone through it, thought about the pictures that he wants to use, and they're all cracking pictures on a variety of things. But they're not necessarily, I mean, they're thematically linked in that he took them all in his surroundings, but it's the story of his year. That's the story within this. And so he, underneath each picture, there's some random writing about what was going on at the time or what he'd had to eat, the, you know, on the way to take the picture or something, you know, important like that. So yeah, I do love the diversity, and I think you're right. I mean, I think we need to be sort of really careful to not overplay the this needs to be like the ultimate expression of your work, because otherwise you can end up in a situation where you just get into analysis paralysis and you don't make a thing. Because I think, as you started out with this, well, maybe not exactly, because you were doing it for this project that you were involved with, but it can just be a good way of collecting your pictures from a certain thing or a certain period into a nice book as a first step for yourself. And you can get more than one copy done to give to family and friends, but and take the pressure off that way. I think the only time I've done anything vaguely like this was years ago, where I did it for my now ex-wife's 40th birthday, I think it was, something like that. I just collected loads of pictures of her and the kids into a book together. And, you know, it was, I think, just an entirely personal thing for her. But it was still an exercise in going through, picking the pictures, laying out and all that stuff. So it can be, yeah, it can be anything, can't it?
It can. It definitely can. So I do something similar. On the middle Sunday of every February, I follow my daughter around for the day and just take lots and lots of pictures of her and
she loves it.
4-year-old's a good age to do it. Yeah, when 16, 18 maybe, when I'm following around. We'll see how that goes. But yeah, just doing that, curating that down to a sensible amount of pictures, and then producing a book for her mother for Mother's Day, which is, that gives me about 6 weeks to kind of get the pictures done and into book form. And I've done that for the last few years. But again, it doesn't have to have any audience or any, you don't have to have anybody in mind to see this stuff. You know, it could just be your family or you know, a limited group of people. And you can target the people that you're making the thing for, and you can be as personal as you want it to be, of course. So
let's say that you've got, you know, you talked about the fact that if you look back through your collection, through your prints, you may see actually recurring themes, or you might have a collection of stuff or a body of work or a particular trip you've been on or something like that. Let's say you've got an idea at least of what images you might want to include in your first scene. What's the first step for you when you're deciding about how to go, you know, how your zine is going to be? What's the first thing that you're thinking about after you've decided broadly on the images?
Yeah, so again, as I said, you 30 is quite a good number for a zine. Again, completely up to what people fancy, but if you start having more than kind of 30 pictures in a book, it can get a bit much, if you know what I mean. You know, from experience and from a bit of messing around with different sizes, I've found that kind of 25, 30, 35 pictures at the most, I think, is a good kind of number. So to get to that number, I'd probably start with about a short list of sort of 50 odd, probably, which happens to be the same number as of free prints that you can get from Boots or Snapfish. So if you sign up with an email address, you can get 50 free 6x4 prints. So often what you can do is just get your list of 50 pictures, get them all printed for free, and start laying them out. Just leave them laying around, and just, or stick them on a wall if you've got space, or, you know, box on the coffee table that you can pick up every now and then, and just go through them and start weeding out the ones that don't quite make it.
That's an interesting process. I have done something similar once before. I have from some years back, maybe 2011, a couple of collections I did on just on one walk. I took both of them actually through London in the daytime, and but deliberately set a path, a straight line between two points that would take you through various different neighbourhoods. Yeah. Although that's not really the right name for areas of London.
Boroughs.
Yeah, well, yes, maybe not quite boroughs. I wasn't walking that far. But you know, it was, yeah, but different areas, you know, so yeah, residential, then big touristy places, then business places, that kind of thing, smart places, not so smart places, and I ended up with I can't remember, you know, maybe 50 odd shots that I then printed out 6x4. Do you know what I did? I had you know that roll of whiteboard stuff you can get that works by static.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Where you can put, yeah, so I had a wall in the house and that had some space, and I got sheets of this stuff. You buy it on a roll, and you can put the sheets up, and they cling to the wall by static. But also, your photos cling to them by static, and then you've
that's a really good idea.
Very easy, very easy to move them around, because yeah, they just stick wherever you put them.
That's a great idea. I use that stuff at work and have never thought of that application for it, and we'll be stealing some tomorrow.
Oh, excellent. Well, I've added something to the process. Excellent.
Yeah. Oh, for sure.
The Even idea if it's of, only of... inspiration for theft.
No, that's a great idea, because so the next part of the sequence after you've started to thin them out is to start thinking about pairing them up. Unless you're going to go for one image per page, which obviously doubles the number of pages, makes things twice as expensive. But starting to pair pictures up, things that work well side by side. And again, that sounds maybe more difficult or more complex than it needs to. But I think anybody who takes pictures who can understand any kind of anything about composition or just looks at lots of pictures will start to see when things work well next to each other or when they don't. And that can be, you know, that can be leading lines that lead from one page to the next, or it can be, you know, similar shapes, circles, for example, on facing pages that, so there might be two completely different things that happen to have a similar shape in them and therefore make the thing, work well side by side. So yeah, that idea of laying them out, which allows you to thin them down and then start to think about sequence, I think is an essential part of the process, really.
Mm. Where do you fall? Oh, not this. I'm trying to think back to the zines of yours that I've seen, and very few of them have got much in the way of writing along with the pictures, have they? Yeah. I think a few have got some notes with them, but generally speaking, it is very much the pictures talking for themselves. How much more tricky does it make it if you do start introducing other elements like writing, like descriptions, like, you know, poetry, whatever it may be, for the Sonnet 16? Incidentally, Aidan, we haven't sent a poem for our Sonnet 16 scene.
Well, it can go in the book.
Absolutely. Does it make it more complicated?
I'm sure it does. I avoid it. Where I stand on words, so I don't tend to caption pictures. I'd let people again work them out for themselves. Something to think about. If you put the writing, I usually do have some, you know, a paragraph to say the reason why this thing exists, sort of thing. So, you know, these are a collection of pictures that made me think about this, that, and the other. Fabrica, I did write a little bit more in that, because that I'd spent 4 or 5 years creating those pictures. They were pretty personal to me because they were talking about abandoned factories and former industrial sites. And I'd spent, at that point, I'd been in the same factory for sort of 25 years, I think, and had been through. So I'll tell you the story, seeing as you're listening. So 25 years in the same factory, you build all these kind of relationships with people, and people come and go, and you kind of know their life story and all that sort of thing. But you also build a relationship with the place. So you walk in and out of the same door every day, and you operate the same switches, and you sit at the same chair and all that sort of stuff. So I was visiting these abandoned factories and thinking about the fact that people had those same kind of relationships with these places that were now derelict and you know, falling to pieces, and those walls and those switches that you could still see were, you know, people had spent 25 years coming and going to those places. So that was what Fabrica was trying to be about. But so I wrote I wrote a couple of paragraphs about that and the fact that my memory is really bad. And so these places often I have more kind of attachment to them because I don't have to remember them, if you see what I mean. So that relationship happens every day and has been for 25 years. So I don't sort of need to remember it. Anyway, if you read the back of Fabrica, it kind of makes sense. But I put that writing at the back of the book so that people could work the way through it and they could make their own mind up about what the pictures were about and then get my take on it. So you can choose to put your writing at the start of the book and set the scene and say, okay, these are all pictures about X, Y, and Z. And then people can already know what it is that you're trying to tell them. Or you can put the writing at the back of the book and let people work it out for themselves and then tell them the punchline or tell them, you know, your take on it. Or you can, of course, caption every single image if that's what you want to do. Or poetry, seen that in quite a few zines now where people have kind of put that kind of, you know, creative writing alongside pictures. And I struggle with that a little bit just because my understanding and my ability to understand poetry is probably not as... I'd sooner look at the picture itself rather than try and work out what the poem's trying to tell me sometimes.
Could we put limericks with our pictures?
Of course.
Has anybody done that yet? I mean, that feels like maybe this is virgin territory we should be branching out into.
I think we're going to split due to creative differences fairly soon. I'm going to launch my own zine.
But all of my pictures were taken in Nantucket, eh? Did you?
With a camera made out of a bucket. Yeah, okay, fair enough.
So, that's not what it was rhyming with, Nantucket.
So, well, luckily you've never been anywhere other than Solihull, so you're all right. this is interesting, isn't it? Because there are so many ways of doing this, Graham mentioned our good friend Matthew's book, who, despite being bullied senseless all year, has dedicated his 2019 book to somebody called Cockwomble Jago, who I think I might know.
That's a little rude. Also, he, at the back of the book, retracts that dedication and dedicates it instead to blooming Jack Johnson, who admittedly is a far nicer person than me.
That he just stuck that page in the copy he sent to you. Nobody else has that page. So remember what Ian was just saying about you can log in online and you can change things very easily. And
damn it.
The good news is you've got a one-off.
Limited edition. It'd be worth a fortune.
It would be, yeah. It definitely will be in the future. So, yeah, but the reason for bringing it up I'm not a great one for artist statements, particularly. And I think I like the idea of including words at the back of a book, rather than at the front. But I also do like the very irreverent narrative style that Matthew has for his. It really sets the tone. It's always
and
great
fun. These things will reflect your character in some way, won't they? You will learn a little bit about the person that's made it by the sort of things that they've chosen to include. Limericks will perhaps perhaps set the scene nicely.
There you go. I think this is definitely a thing we have to do. I had a thought somewhere and I instantly derailed my own thought, which is quite impressive. Okay, I remember what it was now. Okay, so I'm looking at... I've got a selection of people's zines that I've sent. So I've got the recent one that I got sent this last week by Fraser Yule. I've got Matthews. I've got a couple that Martin Scarland has sent me, which he made at home. All very different. I'm looking at Fraser's now. A question I have is about... So we talked about the idea of how you choose what images you want to use and sequence them. And that's all great and fine and simple, assuming you're going with one image to a page, et cetera, et cetera. What about when you start getting a bit more complicated and start putting more images on the page or images and text and stuff like that? How do you, I suppose, to begin with, what software do you use? How easy is it to do that? Are there any up the online printing services out there that make it easier than others to do that? Or do you have to approach all of them with pretty much a finished product and just go, print this, please?
Yeah, so there are options. So if you can use InDesign, if you have access to InDesign, InDesign's really expensive. I think it was £20 a month, like a subscription thing. So I think I tried a trial of it briefly. It was too complicated to understand in the 7-day trial that I had, so I gave up on it and did something else. If you use Mixam, again, don't want to completely keep pushing Mixam, but their service has suited what I do pretty well. They do provide kind of downloadable templates that you can use, and then it's a case of dropping pictures in to fill those shapes effectively. But I prefer to use Lightroom or Photoshop so I'll create a page which is the size of the page of the book that I'm going to use, and do it one-to-one scale sort of thing, and then bring the picture in, and if there's text going alongside it or multiple pictures, I'll actually move them around on the page manually, if you like, and position them where I want to position them. And then eventually, once you've satisfied and you've kind of done all the pages and you're ready to go, you can sort of flatten those down, save them as PDFs ready for the upload. But I think if you're able to think about it in a way that will allow you to produce each page individually like that, rather than using templates and the like, then for me, that's the way that works best. And it gives me more sort of control over what I'm doing. But yeah, there are options out there. InDesign obviously is what the pros use, and having seen one or two zines that have used that, you know, you can tell. Particularly if you're using text and overlaying text onto pictures and things like that, then it's particularly good for that. As I say, the templates from Mixam are pretty good, but again, you're a little bit limited to what they've provided to you. If you can use Photoshop, you can create. If you understand the canvas size control to sort of create a background that's the shape and size of the final book, and then just, you know, position the picture where you want it, start positioning text and things like that. And then if you copy or save as that page to the next page, then you'll make sure that the image is in the same place and any text is in the same place on each page, if that's important to you.
Yeah, there's so many different ways. I mean, my own attempts at publishing were some years ago, and were more sort of corporate stuff rather than anything as creative as this. But I remember there were lots of different options, and you can make it as complex or as easy as you like. Graham, I recommend we make our first go, we make it fairly straightforward.
Oh, no, I think complex as possible. No, I agree. Definitely keep it simple. Yes, definitely. Because as you said, I'm looking at sort of a couple of different ones here. So we've got the Kodak 2238 project that you were part of, Ian, and you put together the photo book for that, didn't you?
Yeah.
So do you want to just talk briefly about what that was, what the project was, and what the photo book sort of came together as?
Yeah, so 2238 was, it's a movie duplication film, so used in Hollywood for making hard copies of movies. And as I understand it, they separate the colour channels and record each colour channel of a movie onto a piece of film. You know, like a roll of film, the way you traditionally think of a movie being projected, but they do that three times for each of the color channels, and the film that they do that onto is this 2238 stuff. So, if you happen to be in Hollywood, it's available in these huge rolls for this particular process. So, a fellow called Michael Bartosek, who runs the Ultra Low ISO podcast. He got a roll of this stuff, so a bulk roll of it, and decided to kind of reach out to the Facebook film community to say if anybody's interested in shooting this through stills cameras. He was going to bulk roll it into 36 exposure rolls and send two rolls each out to sort of 30-35 photographers around the world, and then we'd sort of work out what we're going to do with the pictures afterwards. So he did that. 30 of us signed up for it. There was a Facebook group. We sort of had to compare notes a little bit in, firstly, how to shoot it, because it was ISO, I think it's 3 to 25 or something like that. It's really low ISO, and hadn't really been processed in the normal chemicals that you can use. So your Ilfotex and things like that, there weren't any recipes, because this stuff had never been used for this particular application. So that Facebook page sort of grew into being the reference point for 2238 and people shooting that in normal cameras, as I say. And then, yeah, eventually we kind of reached out to the people that had been involved in that original bulk roll of film and said, send me your best two pictures and we'll put it into a zine. So that made the curation quite simple, because I got 30 people sending me two pictures each, and that was the content. So all I really had to do was pair them up, and to make sure that I kind of gave everybody equal footing or equal, you know, status in the project. All the pictures are the same size. They're all laid out in more or less the same way. Obviously, there's landscape, there's portrait. There are a couple of panoramic pictures in there, but they all take up the same amount of space on the page, if you see what I mean. So they're all, you know, it was kind of equal across all the people that were taking part. And I did that with... That was just using Photoshop, bringing the image in, extending the canvas size up to the size of the page as it's going to be printed, and working out a sequence. And that was, so I did print all of those pictures out, laid them all out on the floor, paired them up into pairs that kind of made sense next to each other, put them in a sequence that I thought worked, and then used those prints and actually put one of those prints in with each of the copies that are sent out when we produced the zine. And we produced 50 copies. So everybody that was in the original group got a copy, and then a few people were interested as well. And we sold those as well. I put a cover on it. I kind of mimicked the Kodak colors and found a font that was more or less the Kodak font for the kind of title page. And mix and printed that. It is quite a thick book, so that, again, as I say, it's 60 pages. There's a heavier cover on that, so it's probably got the highest production values of anything that I've produced so far, but people really liked it, and as you say, it's more book than zine perhaps, but it's a really good record of the project.
It's lovely. It is a really lovely record of the project. It's beautifully put together. Because obviously it's all black and white images. One of the things I find interesting about it is that you've chosen some of the pages, the images are displayed with the white background, some of the pages with a black background. Was that just, is you going through with each one, just trying them out on each side, seeing which looked best, or was there some other thought process behind that?
So my favorite look to photo books and zines is this idea of having a black page and then the white bits of a black and white image kind of coming out of the darkness. So again, another zine that I put together a few years back with Dan Smith was called Nighttime Adventures in Neopan. And that was all printed on black paper and was just, as I say, the barest amount of detail of a street lamp or of something lit by a lamp coming out of the darkness of the page.
Something lamp-based, basically, was the important thing.
Lamps did play a significant part in that project. Yeah, that's for sure. I like that look. I like black pages and kind of sort of leaning into the picture to kind of work out what it is that's being shown there. And some of the pictures in the 2238 that were submitted to that, I thought would look good in that kind of situation. So on a black background, black border, so you can't see where the edge of the picture is and where it sort of fades to black, if you see what I mean. That's why some of them are on black pages, and in a couple of cases there were pictures that were really quite similar that instead of, I tried both ways. I tried with white and tried with black, and just decided which I like the look of better. So it's nothing more scientific than that.
That's cool though. I like that. I have to admit, I am a fan myself of the look where you can't tell where the photo ends and the background begins. I have to say, just on the topic. Sorry, go on.
No, I was just going to say, if you do like that look, and as I say, I'm a really big fan of it, there's a French photographer called David Nissen, and his work is all like that. And it's it's really worth checking out. So he's a commercial photographer, shoots stuff for Hugo Boss and whoever else it is, but his personal work is all nighttime stuff, and he's all printed on black paper, really dark pictures with just the slightest amount of detail. It's really, really good.
Oh, right, yeah. I'm just calling that up now. Yes, I can see that I'm going to have to spend a little bit of time on this website. And I have to say, just a comment on the 2238 project, because it features in a post on your blog called Top 5 Posts of 2019. Mm-hmm. And I looked at it, and the lead picture for that is of a lamppost. And I my brain just said, this post is going to be amazing. This is going to be the top five lamppost pictures of 2019.
Unfortunately, that was number six.
I was thinking, this is going to be, I really like that, the best lamppost of 2019. That would be a good blog post. There you go. There's a good creative idea for you. Good blog post.
I once had a conversation with Mr. Emulsive, who said, oh yeah, so when I think of your photography, I think of street lamps, of single street lamps. And I thought, well, that's a really kind of limited, you know, if my life's work is like one street lamp, I've not really done too well.
But I wouldn't say that, but I would say it is a signature lamp. Image of yours.
Yeah. So I was shooting that sort of thing on digital before I sort of returned to film. And the reasons for doing it were that I tended to work during daylight hours, particularly during the winter, obviously. And it was always dark. If I wasn't in work, it was dark. So that was all I could go out and shoot. So that's where that came from.
Good stuff.
Because you've done various different zines in various different styles. You started off with your simpler ones, and then up to things like the 2238, which is a very nice production. How many pages here, hadn't it? 50?
Oh, it's 60 pictures, I think. So there's probably a few more pages for a little bit of text.
And it's one of those things that kind of crops up as we're talking about these things that we get sent them. You know, in this week we've had Fraser's come in, which is beautiful. I've got the Light Leak magazine here from the Shutter Slugs at UC Santa Cruz, which again is this lovely magazine. One of the things that makes a big difference in terms of I suppose feel is the best word of these zines is the way that they are bound and put together. So sort of by contrast, this I want to make this perfectly clear, this is not a qualitative contrast, it's mm-hmm. just the style and the absolute. I've got Eric's All Through a Lens zine here, which it's fantastic. I mean, it's completely different. It's so much production gone into, with all the writing and the imagery and in there. And it's a completely different thing. It feels like what I think of as a classic zine. And the way that it's made is it's stapled through the middle, and it's great. I mean, I love it. It just feels like a real zine-ass zine. I think it's probably the best way of putting it. The choice about how you physically construct it also affects people's perception of the work, doesn't it?
It definitely does, yeah. So I'm old enough that I used to follow Leicester City in the second division of English football, and zines back in those days meant, you know, a photocopied two sheets of A4 paper folded in the middle with a staple through. Photocopied with somebody's strange thinking about Leicester City, and that was a zine back in those days. They've come a long way because of this our access to this kind of cheap printing services. Yeah, some of these things aren't zines. I think the original zine ethos, that idea of, you know, running these things off, handing them out at gigs or football matches. We've sort of come a long way from that. But, you know, they still achieve many of the same goals that you're trying to do. If you're trying to get your work out there or you know, think about putting things into a sequence and telling a story with it, you can do that with a from the lowest budget through to through to, you know, things with a spine and a perfect bind and all that sort of stuff. But those creative choices, I think, are, so I was talking earlier about what it adds to your photography to start thinking of, thinking in those terms about it. So rather than just, you know, thinking of a picture and taking a picture and it sitting on your hard drive, to think about how you're going to use it and what paper it might end up printed on and what, where it will fit in a sequence of images and whether that would make a good cover for a, for a, for a collection of these pictures. You know, all of a sudden you're thinking about photography in a different way. And then, yeah, paper choice, covers, whether you're going to put a spine on, things like that. The reason I put spines on a couple of my books is, again, because I like that idea of it sitting on the bookshelf and somebody will see it. If it's got a spine and some writing on the spine, then you know, it kind of catches the eye a little bit more. And, yeah, so paper choice, for example, deciding on matte or gloss paper. Matte really suits these dark images that I was talking about, but your blacks are never quite black enough if you're on matte paper, so you might move to something a little bit more glossy to get it a little bit darker. And again, it's another creative choice almost in how are you going to present this stuff. Yeah, all of those choices.
I'm thinking back over some of the ones that I've seen recently, and so we had Karen Freer's fantastic zine on roller derby, and this is the first one that she'd made, and it's a simply made stapled fairly small zine, but it just suited the images really nicely. It's one of those things, I look at the stuff and I think it could be quite easy when you're putting together a zine or a photo book to think, well, I want to make it look as photo booky as possible. So, okay, well, I want it to be this lovely, perfect bound thing with thick paper. Yeah. And, but I don't think that necessarily suits all types of work. I think it is important to look at what you actually want, what feelings you want to instill with people and kind of, because, you know, I think it these photo book ass photo zines beautifully suit some work. You know, they are things that you will put on your bookshelf and come back to and enjoy mm-hmm. as you will with all of these. But yeah, there are certainly other content which just think it does suit a more simple. I'm trying to think what the polite way. I guess a low rent approach to it just suits it more.
Yeah, and low rent. I think you should be, say it loud and say it proud. It doesn't need to be that can be a kind of aesthetic that you're looking for. You know, if something is a book, then you're almost changing the audience that you're going after in some ways, I think. You know, the idea of a simple pamphlet that you can stick in your pocket and fold up and don't care if it gets a bit damaged and a bit dog-eared and that sort of thing, then yeah, that's just as good, just as I say, it's achieving all the same goals that you're setting out to do. So yeah, it's just again, it's that asterisk. It's do it however you want to do it, and don't worry about you know, that it's not a shiny paper or as not as, you know, the paper's not as heavy weight as somebody else's. It's just it's up to you.
Yeah, yeah. I realize this is a very difficult question to ask, so here it comes. I know you get a lot of zines yourself. You've taken delivery of several this week that I've seen. Do you have any from over the last year or even further back than that that particularly stand out for you for one reason or whatever, whether it's the way it's been put together, whether it's the content, whether it's the construction, are there any that have really leapt out to you and you've looked at and thought, okay, going forwards I will be doing things differently because of this scene?
Yeah, so even this week, as you say, I had four different zines delivered. Two of those, and it seems a shame to kind of pick out two, but there were a couple in there that really kind of struck me as being fantastic, and kind of showed me that the bar on these things is being raised all the time. That people are, more and more people are getting involved, I think, is the key. So one of them's from a guy called Ian Turpin. I'm not sure if I've heard his name on your podcast.
Oh, you certainly have. Yes. Yeah, frequent correspondent, Ian.
He went out and shot a project where he set his shutter speed for a second and then went out shooting for a second. And what's it called? Deliberate intentional camera movement. Is it called that?
Yeah.
So he went out and did that, which, you know, sounds a little bit of a gimmick and what have you, but it's great. And again, it's really simple. It's all black and white. It's not too many pages. It's on the paper's not particularly special, but I think the consistency of the work and just the simplicity of it, which is what I'm all for. I start getting envious if I'd see things that are really kind of overcomplicated and sort of working out how they were laid out or produced. These simple ones that I think are kind of aspirational that any of us can do, they're all achievable for somebody with limited talents in terms of InDesign or just creativity. So his is really kind of aspirational and just really simple, but the quality of the work, and as I say, the consistency. He's picked a theme, and I don't know if it was one or two roles or if it was all in the same day maybe, but that consistency just makes the body of work more powerful, more cohesive, and more kind of more memorable. So you might not remember individual images in some of these books, but if they are consistent and have got a strong theme to them, you'll remember the theme and you'll remember the look or whatever it is about the particular zine. The other one that I got this week worth mentioning is Gareth Morton's book on Iceland. So he's raising money for the Australian bushfire appeals. So all the money that he makes from these zines, he's sending straight off to Australia. It's not just the profits, it's all the money that he takes for these. And this is a collection of pictures from Iceland. And this is a 210 millimeter square book. Again, really consistent layout, one image per page. It's all in Iceland, which makes it spectacular to begin with. They're all film images, obviously, and really worth checking out. I think he's still got a few left. It's a good cause. Definitely worth a look at that one. And both of those, to your point, have kind of made me think about consistency and about the idea of not having too much variety in future books than I might do. So you know, pick a film stock, pick a camera, pick a style in the case of the camera movement one, and just that will again provide a consistency and a look to the book that will make it, again, it makes it stronger than the sum of its parts sort of thing.
There's a lot to think about there. I like it. I do. Don't get me wrong, but there's a lot to think about there. Yeah. Ooh. I mean, I've got that sort of ooh feeling now. My mind is going racing. I'm not sure if it's making much progress, but it's definitely racing.
I'm just looking on the Mixam website now, and just to give, because we've been talking about this, you could do this, could do that. I think it's worth, I mean, you mentioned earlier about the price of doing this, but to give people an idea of how much it could potentially cost, if you just really wanted to just have a go and just throw something at the wall and just go, well, I just want to go through this process to get... I don't know whether they add more stuff on at the end, but I'm just looking at their sort of front cover page pricing here. So on the cheapest end of this, going for sort of an A5 black and white, uncoated, you know, fairly thin paper kind of thing, but basically a good, just a starting point, you could get 50 copies for 30 quid, which seems pretty cheap. So you've got very little to lose with that. And you can get it uncoated, so you could just burn them if they're crap.
Yeah, the last one I did, the pilgrimage thing, was 30 copies A5 that was 16 pages plus a four page cover, if you see what I mean, so four sides, and that was kind of middleweight paper, because I wanted to make sure you couldn't see one picture through the paper from the other side of the page, sort of thing. And that was $39.50 for 30 copies.
It is very, very affordable, isn't it? Yes.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, if there are options, whether you want to sell it, whether you want to give them away or raise money for charity, you know, I think there's, and something I've been thinking about doing this year, perhaps, and again, talking to Ian Turpin about, is the idea of a zine swap, sort of doing a immersive Secret Santa with where people can sign up and just exchange their zines, and you don't know who you're going to get, and you'll just get a zine in the post and you'll send yours on to somebody else.
Knowing how good people are, I think I was listening to somebody talking about, I mean, obviously Emulsive and Iceland work very hard to make the Emulsive Secret Santa work, even though there are always a few bad Santas with that. But I think I was listening to somebody else talking about a print swap, and again, just people are not always great at holding up their end of the bargain. But you did bring up something I wanted to talk to you about, because as we said, a lot of people are making zines, and I'm on Mixam now, as I said, and it looks as though you got 30 copies. I don't know what the minimum number of copies you can get there done, but it defaults to 50, but let's say you get 30 or 25. That's still more than the one that you need. So there is then the thing of, well, what do I do with the rest of these? So you can send them out to people. That's great. If you're just going to give them away to friends, family, or just people who you think, well, they can't politely say no, so they're getting one. But if you do want to try and recoup costs, have you sold any of your zines to date?
Yeah. So pretty much all of them, I think. So one of them I gave away. I took all of them to a bookshop in the town where I'd made the work, and just gave them to the fella in the bookshop and said, do what you like with these, and just to see what happened, really. But they were really cheap. That was a really kind of basic. It was a small, I can't think, it was kind of half of A5, so A6, I guess. It was that size. Didn't cost me a lot of money at all. Didn't make too many copies, and just did it as an experiment to see what happened. But yeah, I think otherwise they've all been sold, or as I said, particularly if you start bumping up the paperweight, putting covers on to ship these things in the post, as soon as you cross 150 grams or something like that in the UK, and I'm not sure what it is elsewhere in the world, but postage costs seem to skyrocket as soon as you get above any kind of weight. So those simple, straightforward zines are reasonable to send out and go as letters. But anything above that, you start getting into package territory, and you've got to charge a little bit of money just to sort of cover the postage costs, if nothing else.
Good tangible tip.
Yeah, you probably want to check what that weight limit is, rather than me trying to guess from when I used to live in the UK. But another interesting thing to think about is, certainly in analog photography, there seems to be a market, and I don't want to use the word market because I sell these things just to cover the costs and of producing them. But there are people that are interested, and there are people that will give you a fiver for a copy of your zine because they collect them, or they're interested, or they want to see how they look and it may lead on to them doing their own sort of thing. I've never really produced a zine of digital pictures because I don't know who would be interested in those. I'm sure now that I've got a few people who've bought previous stuff, and you know, I've spoken to an awful lot of people about zine projects, that if I was to produce something of digital pictures, then people may be interested in that. But it feels to me that there's certainly a market, and if you had 25 copies of a zine and you're part of this analog film community, that people would be interested in it.
Do you think that with the kind of zines that we've been talking about, that the main market for people who will be interested are other community members rather than a broader audience? And should that possibly inform the way that you're putting them together as well? Because, you know, I'm guessing that there's I mean, I know I put these things in front of Sinead and go, look, they've been sent this, they've been sent this. And some she likes more than others because, you know, sometimes the content just speaks to her in different ways. But I can't ever see it being the kind of thing that she would necessarily seek out. Do you think it is primarily our peer group that is most likely to be interested in these kinds of things?
I think it probably is. But as an example, when I moved to Ireland, there's another pilgrimage that happens where people climb a mountain called Croagh Patrick on Reek Sunday is the occasion. So every year, sort of 10,000 people walk up this hill. And over the years, lots of famous photographers have photographed this because it's a pretty spectacular thing. All these people grinding the way up this pretty big mountain, usually in bad weather. And some of them do it barefoot as well. So when I moved to Ireland, was really keen to go and take pictures of this and did that and produced the zine of the pictures. And I was fairly new at work, as I say, having just moved over here. So took a couple of copies in to sort of show people. And as you say, people picked it up and were kind of, yeah, that's all right. And one or two people, you know, were more keen on it. And then an electrician came in to change the light fitting in the office. And he saw this thing and he said, oh, what's this? And I explained. And he says, oh, I do Reek Sunday every year. And I'll go and climb the mountain. And I've done it barefoot. And I've done it for, you know, 25 years. And I organised the coach that takes our church group up this hill every year. How many copies of this book have you got? And I said, well, I've got a box full of them. He said, I'll have as many as you've got. and he gave them to people for their Christmas presents. And it's just, so I think if the theme is something, it needn't necessarily be the fact that they're shot on film or shot with a particular type of camera. If it's a theme that people are interested in, or you know, if it's about a particular town or an event, then again, there might be a interest in it. I nearly said market again. Don't want to say market, but there might be people who are interested in it who would be, you know, willing to give you a couple of quid for a copy of it.
Mm. Oh, that's great. It seems sensible because we're at the beginning of all of this. I mean, you've given us some great general advice on zine production. Where do you think we should start? I mean, like, how do we make a zine? Because you've given us all the nuts and boltsy stuff.
You need to take pictures, first of all.
Listen, I've got a whole flipping smorgasbord of beautifully blurry pictures. So, all right, first question I've got regarding our specific zine.
Yeah.
Do you think we should, and this is, you know, just getting your take on this, should we try and make a zine where, you know, it's going to have our work from the three of us in there? Should we try and make it one that is broadly consistent, or should we try and break it up in ways that reflect us as individuals? Or, you know, I mean, as thinking about it, as somebody who looks at a lot of zines and as somebody who would be reading it rather than making it, what do you think would be an easier approach for us to take into, for, not an easier, a more digestible yeah. approach for people looking at it?
So I, knowing what I do of each of your photography, they're all pretty different. Right. So if I understand, you were talking about using the Myopic Me work, which is pretty different to Aid stuff. You know, portraits with flash, for example, maybe part of what he's planning to include. So I think the three of you produce pretty wildly different stuff. So I think trying to tie those together into a theme is going to be pretty difficult.
sounds like we should celebrate our differences rather than try and glue it all together.
So I think rather than trying to sort of mix it up and you know, create this kind of sequence as we were talking about, that you do three sets of six or eight pictures each or whatever, mm-hmm. And just have your own kind of subsections within it, and just put some work that you're happy with, that you like, that you want to show people.
That's already making it quite a lot harder for me.
But it's just, there's an element of being, there's an element of psychology in this, isn't there? Being brave, of putting stuff out there and what have you.
Yeah. You know that this is a pretty nice community, you know, that people are generally supportive. Mm. Well, yeah, my experience is if
no, they're lovely. I love our community.
Apart from one or two people who you can name, but I won't.
Well, there's Evan Hamish for a start.
Yeah. You'll get good feedback. You won't necessarily hear from the people who hate it and throw it in the bin on day one. You'll hear from the people who want to tell you that they enjoyed what you've done. So
we might hear from Jeremy, who might tell us he's thrown it in the bin on day one. But that's Jeremy's role out there.
Okay.
Well, that's good. I think that gives us a starting point anyway, to sort of the fact that we're maybe going to try and think about it. I think we probably figured that might be the best case for us to go with, to try and do it separately. So I suppose really the next step for us is to work on our images and try and figure out what we're going to produce content-wise for that. That seems like it's probably a good place to go next, doesn't it, Aid?
I think so, definitely. I think, I've been looking at some of my stuff that already exists, but prompted by you mostly, actually, to finally do something with travel photos from my trip to Bhutan. So, but they are going to be very different from, certainly from your Myopic Me collection. So, I think the thing to do then is to start compiling these. I like the idea of starting with a long list and then whittling it down. I like the idea of living with them in a physical sense for a while and then maybe trying to pair them up. Definitely some really good, some good philosophical chat and some good tangible tips on how to get going.
Yeah, absolutely. Actually, I mean, we've talked a lot, but if you could, like, if you were to boil down your top tips for people with doing this, Ian, what would be the top things that you would say from your experience, you know, successes and fails, the top things that you think if people do these simple things, they're more likely to have success? What would they be?
So, as I just said, live with it for a little while. So when you think it's ready to go, just give it another couple of days. Just reread it one more time. Just look at it. You know, curate it or whatever you want to say, that just pare it down to the point that it does what you want to do with it, and you're not going to regret it in a couple of months' time when you think, oh, why did I include this or leave that one out? So point number one is you know, just live with it until you're satisfied that it's going to be right. And secondly, just do what you want with it. Don't kind of worry about the peer pressure or the, you know, that other people's who've got more spare change, who can produce something that's more lavish. Don't worry about that. The important thing is getting your pictures in the hands of other people and on their bookshelf or into their house, into their life somehow. And that can be done very simply. So don't overthink it. Don't worry about it too much. And it can be as artistic or as creative or as simple as you want it to be. It's your stuff, you know.
Cool.
Yeah, that's great. That's fantastic. Thank you so much. You did, I think you covered quite a lot of this stuff and perhaps some of it in more depth fairly recently on the Viewfinder Vikings, didn't you?
Yeah. Episode 19. we produced those episodes so infrequently that it's still the last episode, even though it was quite a while ago. So that project we talked about where I shot it and processed and uploaded the zine all in a day, I kind of talked through that day and through each of the process steps. Take a listen to that. Unfortunately, the wind noise when I'm up on the mountain taking pictures is pretty bad, but try and get past that and then it kind of settles down in my kitchen as I'm processing pictures and things. So check that out.
All good. Awesome. Excellent. Well, we should probably start to wrap up there, should we, Graham? Unless there's anything else particularly we need to get through or to cover today.
I'm probably forgetting things, but I don't think so. I think we're all right. Famous last words. I think we're all right. Probably.
Oh, I'll tell you what, we should probably give some notice of the sunnies, I suppose, shouldn't we?
Yes. I think we did briefly mention at the beginning, or maybe we didn't. Maybe we briefly mentioned before we started recording.
Who knows? The beginning of this podcast was a while back.
Yeah, Yeah. But yeah, obviously we've been putting it off because no Rachel, and we really didn't want to do it without Rachel. We are sincerely hoping Rachel's going to be able to rejoin us next week. Really, really hoping for that. But I think we're planning to do the Sunnies next week, because if it gets much later, we'll have to start taking votes for next year. So that's the plan for next week. And hopefully Rachel will be back with us. So we will be Fab Force 3 or maybe 4. Matthew really wants to join us, and I'm tempted to say, well, look, if you want to get up in the middle of the night, you know, we'll allow it. So yeah, that's where we are with the Sunnies.
Okay, cool. All right, well, in which case then, that's probably it for this week, isn't it? Ian, thank you ever so much for being on the podcast. Finally,
it's a pleasure.
Finally. has it been everything you hoped it would be?
No, I think so. I wrote a couple of notes about kind of the process, and I think we've touched all of that process and in an order that makes sense. But if anybody needs any help with putting them together their own zines, if you guys need any more help with particularly how to use the Mixum website, which can be a little bit clunky, there are alternatives out there, of course. Yeah, give me a shout if I can help.
Okay, thanks. Which is a good prompt, actually. Where would people find you on the internet? Where do you promote your work?
So I have a blog, which is barnabynot.com, and barnabynot on Instagram, Twitter, etc. Yeah, I'm fairly regular on all of those things. So yeah, come and say hello.
Cool. Cool, thank you. Okay, well, that's it then, folks. We have been the Sunny 16 podcast. We'll play you out actually now. With Rachel's band Rocher, you can get their album Promises I Should Have Kept on Bandcamp and Apple and other places, Amazon, I think, as well. Oh, it's always so hard, this bit.
Spotify.
Yeah, that one too. Definitely that one too. It has been an honour and a privilege to talk with you all. And as always, we'll be back next week. Goodbye.
Bye.
Bye.